Welcome to another episode of The Working Title, hosted by PJ Harries.
There you go, mate. Are you there?
Yep, all good.
Wonderful, Royal. So, welcome to the podcast, mate. Welcome to The Working Title.
Thanks for having us on.
No worries. Absolute pleasure. It probably feels a bit weird for you now going on the other side, not hosting and actually being the topic of discussion.
Yeah, no, it's good. I've got to do a little bit more talking this time.
Yeah, got to get it from you.
Yeah.
Right, so for all you guys out there going, who's this Essence Sounding Royal? This is Tom Telford. He is a former Warm Wind sniper, and he has set up and he runs Recon Fit, which is a well-established and sort of building fitness company, personal training, group training, that kind of thing. And he's also recently started the Wet and Dits podcast with another Royal. So what we're going to do, mate, is we'll get into a little bit more about all those different topics as we go forward. But let's have a little introduction of yourself, mate. How old are you? Where are you from? What's Tom about?
Well, I'm 26 now. Left the Corps last year after 6 years. So joined when I was 19. Been out for, like I said, nearly a year now. Living in London, which is where I'm from originally. I grew up around here. And like I said, started getting into the fitness industry, started Recon Fit, which I'm enjoying. It's a nice way to still be in touch with the military side. I still work with yourself, a lot of other military guys. So going from then, yeah, it's all going well at the minute.
Nice, mate. Nice. And what about when you were younger, when you were growing up? You grew up in London, did you?
I did, yeah. So I'm from South London, Croydon. I was born here, raised here. So was here up until 18, which was when I started getting ready to join the Marines. So it was the first time I'd really been away on the train down to Limpston. So since I've left, I've moved back to Croydon, which obviously is nice to be back home after travelling around a lot. But yeah,
it's good to come back to that support network, isn't it? Especially when you leave something like the Marines, it's pretty daunting, isn't it? So it's good to come back to at least familiar surroundings.
Yeah, it's good. I was based quite far away wherever I was in the Marines, so I didn't really get too much time to come back home. It was sort of twice yearly, that sort of time frame. So you sort of lose touch a bit with old school friends, but it's good to be touching base with them again now. There's not too many Royals around the London area compared to sort of the southwest, going a bit further up north. So the bootneck group we've got around here is good to sort of start making new connections, meeting some new lads who I didn't know before and I didn't know live that close to me.
Yeah, it's mad. Like I whenever you're in the Corps, if you met someone else from the southeast, Essex, London, it was, you know, like rocking or shit, wasn't it? They just never came off. Everyone's either a jock, a northerner, or from Plymouth, Portsmouth way. And yeah, I know what you mean. I was the same when I was in. It was sort of, you rarely come home because, especially if you're based up in, say, Faz Lane, is pretty much top corner to bottom corner of the country.
Yeah, well, I did. I went straight up to 4-5 as my first unit, which was obviously quite strange as a southerner. Then I moved over to 4-3, like Fazers, as my second unit. So, like I said, when I did eventually move down to 4-2 as my last unit, I didn't know any southern Marines. It was, like you said, it was all jocks, scousers, anything you want to say, but it wasn't southerners up there. So when I come down, I had a bit of a funny accent coming on. I started saying like at the end of every sentence and now
it weren't just the Gucci Royal Marine slang, it was all the extra bits from being a northerner, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all the gopping northern slang as well.
Awesome, mate. So that gives us a quick insight, but let's go into the Corps bit a little bit more. So you joined quite young then, sort of 18-19 is relatively young compared to most people. When you joined, what troop did you join in?
I joined 181 troop.
181. And were you sort of the youngest, oldest, that kind of thing, or in the middle?
I was one of the youngest. I would say the average age was, I'd say probably around 22, 23 for the troop.
I think that's the same for me.
Yeah, you have the odd sort of 30, 31. We didn't have anyone younger than 18. So there was no 16, 17 year olds. So as a 19 year old, I was one of the youngest.
Yeah. How do you reckon that Do you reckon that was a benefit for you? Do you think maybe on hindsight you'd wished you'd gone in a little bit later? Are you happy now you've went in so early, or do you wish you'd gone in earlier?
Well, I always talk to people about it. There's so many pros and cons to both, isn't there? If you go in younger, you're a little bit more malleable. You take information on a little bit more, willing to learn a little bit more to a degree. You go the older guys, they have a little bit more experience, life experience, but they can also sometimes find it difficult to take instruction as well, especially if they are, say, a few years older than the corporals, the DS.
Yeah, that's it. If they're you know, had their own lives outside, especially if they've got a wife and kids and stuff, and they've maybe been a manager in or like a team leader in their civvy role, and then they come in and they've got a, you know, and they're like 31, 32, and then they've got a 25, 26-year-old corporal shouting at them to brush their teeth. Right? It's you can see where they might get annoyed about it.
Yeah, that's what, for me, it was all right. I was going in as an 18-year-old and I was like, do you know what? I am just going to do what I'm told. I'm a naive little 18-year-old. I'm actually just going to do what they tell me to do. And it didn't bother me. Where some lads find that harder to do, just taking instruction. And you quickly learn that if you're not very good at taking instruction, you're going to struggle.
Yeah. I was the same, mate. I joined at 18 and then had my 19th birthday in training. And I think that is probably, if you don't plan on doing a full career, I didn't know at the time, but if you don't plan on doing a full career, then it's probably the best time to go in, because I, like yourself, left about 3 years ago now. So I left at like 25. So it's sort of, I did 5 years, then came out, and I'm still young enough to start a career. So yeah, I like that. That's a good good sort of insight to people coming in. So you then went on to 4-5 to start with. Then did you go on your snipes from there, or did you go over to 4-3 first? How did all that work?
Well, it was quite a quick turnaround for me. So I was the only one in my troop to go up to 4-5. So I went up by myself, which was a bit weird, straight into Zulu Company. I was the only Sprog turned up day one, which was quite daunting.
At Zulu.
Good luck. At Zulu. At the unit. I was the only Sprog turned up that weekend or that Monday for the unit. I was like, oh my God, what have I walked into here?
Yeah, at the risk of getting anyone in trouble, we'll probably park that one and we'll carry on going forward.
Yeah, so I was quite fortunate. There was a recce selection came up pretty soon, as soon as I got to the unit. So they ran a recce course, which I tried to get on, which I was surprised. So I got onto the course. I'd only been at the unit sort of 6 months and passed the recce selection. So within 6 months, I was in recce troop.
Oh, nice.
So I went from being duty sprog in Zulu to turbo sprog in recce.
Yeah.
And then, so I spent a couple of years in recce there as just a recce operator, and then got on my snipes course, went down, completed that. After my snipes, that's when I moved over to Faz Lane to join MST, yeah. So the maritime sniper team.
All right, sick. So it's quite a nice little journey there. I know some of the other guys, one that was in MST, I think he still might be at the moment, and he did a similar sort of thing. You know, if you get into recce troop, it's a nice little stepping stone, because you do a lot of the skills and drills required for snipes course. You sort of get quite a favour with them as a recce operator, don't you?
Yeah, well, like I said, I was spending day in, day out with the MLs and the snipers. So I was just absorbing everything. They knew I was going on the course. So it's a massive, it is a huge help. You're going on the snipes course. The first thing you do is the shoot with the 338, which 99% of GDs are never going to touch, look at, or shoot. Yeah. Where I'd been firing it for the last year in recce troop. So
yeah, that's a massive step up, isn't it?
Hit the ground running, as well as just, you get given insights of the course, you get given insights of what to expect. It's just an invaluable asset, really.
Awesome. So once you did that, was the choice to leave, was that sort of like motivated by anything in particular, or why did you leave? What was your sort of thought process in leaving the Corps?
Well, after I moved over to 4-3, I had a couple of deployments there. Then MST moved down to 4-2 Commando as part of the new Maritime Operations Unit, which was a change of scene, and the Corps was very much going through a transition phase with it.
Yeah.
And I think MST sort of got the blunt end of the stick with it. They weren't really sure what we were, what to do with us. So the morale in the troop dropped very quickly. It was it wasn't a nice place to be working at the time. You know what it's like in the Corps, especially when you get a troop where morale's low, it just spreads so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's you're going in the mornings and everyone's dripping. You go to the galley, everyone's dripping, back to the grots, people are fredders. It just got worse and worse and worse. And I sort of was getting to the point where I was looking at leaving. I'd had a couple of knee operations, so I was struggling with my knee as well. Played a big part. So I considered leaving, and I think once the seed's been sown in your head about leaving, it's very hard to go back on that. Your sort of head gets turned, and then it's hard for anyone to convince you otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's massively true for pretty much all bootnecks. We've all got that determination and that stubbornness that as soon as you've... I think we're all very open to change our minds if the right evidence approaches, but, you know, from the sound of it, it's the same sort of mindset of the Marines. Once you've made up your mind you're going to achieve something, you knuckle down, you get it done. So once you're already thinking and you're sort of like, yeah, I've made my mind up, I'm leaving, it's pretty much ticking the box, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was as soon as I used to love going in the field, I used to love deploying, used to love anything soldiering. And as soon as I found myself getting to the point where I didn't want to do it, I knew it was time to go.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when you were leaving and when you were going through your notice period and transitioning out and stuff, was recon fit on the cards? Was personal training on the cards? Is that something that came later, you fell into it, or was it part of the plan?
Not really. I did really leave without having a massive plan in my head. I just sort of, I've always been one who's trusted in my own ability, so I knew if I did leave I could make it work one way or the other. So me leaving was quite a snap decision. I was getting ready to go on a deployment on ship on HMS Duncan in the summer, and I put my chit in the sort of 1 or 2 days before we deployed. So I knew that was going to eat up sort of 6 months of my year's waiting list.
Yeah.
So I sort of spent the first 6 months on ship thinking, okay, what am I going to do now then? So I did do my PT qualifications before I left. So I knew I had that to go into, but I hadn't really finalized the whole idea. It was just growing. Even now with any business, you've got to be malleable with it. You've got to let it grow, let it evolve. And it's still doing that now. But no, to answer your question, I didn't have recon fit in my head as I was leaving.
All right, nice. So, you know, I think that, you know, that perfectly transitions on to recon fit itself. Obviously, I know a bit about it just because, you know, I've done my research and it puts Gucci Fots on Insta, so I like them and get drawn in. But for people listening that might not be familiar, what is recon fit? Where did it come from? What does it do? And what's your hopes for it?
Well, it's very much a fitness-based company. However, it moves not just with the fitness. It's a lot to do with mindset. So that's because that's what I enjoy more. I think you can go online and find PTs anywhere. They're a dime a dozen. You go and you'll discover on Instagram, there's about 10,000 PTs telling you how to lift weights and how to use a rowing machine. So I knew that that wasn't the market I was going for. It's too watered down. I knew what I had to offer was the military side, the mindset. So that's the route I'm going down with it as well, is talking about, look, if you're going to go into military, this is what you need to do. There's no point being this ultra fit CrossFitter, whatever you want to put it, if you can't do it when you're cold, you're wet, you're tired. Telling people that these are the sort of things you need to work on. There's so much more to joining the Marines than just being fit. I think you'll agree it's probably sort of 20-25% of the selection process is fitness. The rest of it's completely different.
Yeah, definitely agree with that, definitely.
So yeah, just trying to go around the whole mental aspect of training, the whole mental aspect of the military. Talking now a lot more about mental health, things like that. Especially, I know my audience is largely male, so I do talk a lot more about men's mental health than I do females, which is something that is sort of being pushed a lot more to the forefront now. So there's a lot of interest spiked in it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those things at the moment that's still extremely taboo when it definitely shouldn't be. I think everyone, every bloke out there, especially if you come from a, I wouldn't even say military background, but quite a rigid sort of discipline background that you belong to something bigger than yourself, has experienced some kind of blip or some kind of mental issue. And I think the more people that are pushing it in a positive light is always better.
Yeah, and it's always a very interesting one. So I sort of come at it sometimes with a different angle with my page, in terms of, I don't think it is the be all and end all to be very open and to talk about it all the time. As a male, I do believe there's a time and a place with it. In the military, you can't be open and talking about your feelings all the time because it doesn't work. You need to have that stoicism about you. If everyone was sitting there hugging each other and telling each other they love them, it doesn't have the same effect. You need to be able to put the emotions aside and get the job done. So I do believe there is a balance with it, but it's just finding that balance.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, you know, and I think a lot of people struggle with opening their emotions. And then some people definitely that I've known or had the experience of working with in the civvy world definitely push their emotions too far, to a point of just, you want to say, just get a grip of yourself, mate. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's a balancing act. So Recon Fit itself, it's, as you say, it's growing, it's morphing as any business does. What is your overall vision for it? You know, where do you want to go? What do you want to do with it?
Well, I'm currently now starting to move outside more. So I'm trained mountain leader, trained to take people climbing. So I want to start moving it outside a lot more, getting people out in the hills, getting people out in the open, the outdoors. I mean, I enjoy the PT side, but it's not my passion. I don't really get the enjoyment out of taking someone through a circuit or squatting or deadlifting in a gym, for instance. I'd rather get them outside, going over some map reading, taking them survival training, getting them rock climbing. That's where I really like to be. I thrive in the outside.
Awesome. So sort of a plan to develop, as in, you know, becoming Recon Fit. So as you say, it's not just about being functionally fit in the gym. It's also about having the ability to get outside, move around outside, and be comfortable in that environment. So sort of leaning into that sort of aspect if you can.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the word functional fitness gets thrown around so much nowadays, but at the end of the day, you can't really be functionally fit training in a gym. This is not functional at all, is it? You need to get outside to do that. I mean, there's no point doing, if you want to get better at yomping, people ask me about, there's no point doing continuous step ups and box jumps and so on. Just go outside and start walking up hills. That's the way you get functionally fit.
Yeah, I think that's a massive one. Like, I've had some young lads, you know, in the time that I've been out, ask me and approach me, and they say that sort of thing. You know, how do I get better at yomping? You know, should I go outside running with boots and kit? And it's a very fine sort of line, because when you go into the core, my advice always is just start off right at the bottom. You don't need to get your boots on and start sprinting around your local town, because you're just going to injure yourself, and they build you up slowly to that. However, what you're saying, I fully agree with, and it's a separate point, if you like, that, you know, getting some kit on your back, the safety stores as a minimum, you know, warmers and some scran and stuff, and just going for a walk up the hills, is just what, that is yomping. That is all yomping is walking around the hills. And if you've never done it, it's going to be a big hit to your body.
It is. I mean, I'm the same with you. I agree that if you're going into training or PRMC, there's no need to do it. They will build you up to it. I didn't do any yomping or booted training until I went to PRMC. That was the first time I'd done it. But it can be useful before training, as long as it's programmed well. So you need someone who knows what they're doing to program it for you. It's so easy to injure yourself. It's so intense on the body that I think a lot of times people preparing for the Marines or PRMC or any military outfit they get into, they have a tendency to like thrash themselves before training. They think, I need to train so hardcore to get myself ready for the Marines. Where I think it's a lot more about training smarter rather than training harder. If you actually program your training, put in a few more rest days, keep the intensity up, that's going to get you so much more than I used to do it. You go get up in the morning at 5 a.m, go for a 2-hour run, thinking your nails, thinking this is going to help me so much. Where now, if I could look back and program it a lot more, you could be so much more efficient with your training.
Yeah, I think lessons learned. And I was the same, mate. You know, when I was prepping for PRMC and joining recruit training, all I wanted to do was just, I'd done it in the right way in the sense of I was running all the time, swimming all the time, and just doing bodyweight stuff, didn't touch weights or anything like that. But I was exactly the same as you. I was bored, like not even borderline, I was definitely overtraining. And I started training with like niggles and problems. I remember starting training and I had shin splints when I started, and it's just like I was grizzing that out for the first couple of weeks until I sort of settled into it. And that is just the way it is, isn't it? And I think you've got a great point there. When you say programming stuff, is that something that ReconFit and yourself provide?
We do. So we do a lot of programming for people who are looking to join the Marines. I've got my online package I've created, the Tactical Athlete, which is designed to help lads going into training or even anyone in the military. But in terms of individual training, I don't really do too many just bespoke packages, only because I'm not a massive fan of training someone via Skype or online, for instance. I like to be with them. I like to see how they're progressing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So if people want to follow that plan and stuff, then they can find that for your social media. I saw it actually ping up. So that's a good one, guys. If you are out there thinking, I need a bit of a plan, a bit of a structure to follow, to get fit, ready for something, take a look at that. Awesome. So that sort of carries us on to the social media aspect. Now, you've got quite a bit big following, or a building following on the gram. You're hitting almost 10,000 followers on there. How important do you reckon social media is in, one, getting your message of sort of mindset and that thing across, but also helping the business? How important is it?
It's massive for me. So it is my main marketing tool. It's what I use. To be honest, before I started ReconFit, I didn't even use Instagram. I started the page, I think, about 12 weeks ago now, not really knowing what I was doing. I was having to message my mates to ask how you do things like stories and questions and polls. I had no idea.
Yeah.
But I sort of went with it and it blew up very quickly. A lot faster than I thought it was going to do. So it was growing a lot quicker than I was sort of expecting and really knew how to handle. But as I said, it's evolved. Even if you scroll back through your Instagram now, you can see the evolution of the page, and you have to narrow it down towards your target audience. So I know what people on my page like. If I post something that's bodybuilding related or sort of a pump thing, it doesn't get the interest because it's not what people are on my site for. So it's important to stick to your target audience, stick to your principles. In terms of the business, like I said, I sell my online program on there. So the bigger my following grows, the lot more percentage I'm going to sell on there. So if I, for every 100 followers, I manage to sell a handful, then it's worth getting. But important thing to remember for people in the industry trying to grow their Instagrams and start a business is that followers don't pay your bills at the end of the day. There's no point having 25, 30,000 followers if they're not paying the bills. You need to get out there. I know PTs with a small following who are doing really well because they've got their loyal following, they work, and they've built them connections up.
Yeah, I think it's an issue at the moment that everyone or kids or millennials, however you want to say it, at the moment have got that vision in their mind that if they can just hit 100,000 followers, they're going to be set for life. And maybe back in the day, you know, 5-10 years ago, that would have been almost the case. You know, you hit that amount and companies will approach you and pay for you to post things. But I'm sure you have, and I do. I've got like 700 followers or something, and I get random people DM me all the time saying, you know, I really like your content, can you promote this item? And you click on it because you're interested, and it's like some weird foreign sort of Instagram that you've never seen, and you're like, well, that's quite clearly not legit, is it? And you get inundated with things like that. Or, you know, there's clothing brands are the worst. You know, you put one slight, you hashtag fitness in anything and you'll get four clothing brands like go, oh, can you represent our clothes? And it's like, no, like, what? I'm not even replying, it's not a real thing.
Yeah, it's hard because it does, the Instagram does take up a big part. It is like having a part-time job dealing with the Instagram. So as long as it's working for your business, then commit the time to it. But if you're not getting out of it what you need to, then it's not as important. Obviously, if your business is more online, it's going to be a lot more vital. If your business is, if you run a gym, it's about getting the people into the gym. There's no point having 10,000 followers on your Instagram page who live all over the country or live abroad. You need to get people in your area into your gym to pay the bills.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And I think a lot of people do maybe spend a bit too much time worrying about, you know, wanting to get that coverage on Instagram or the other social media platforms. And as you say, they're not directly responsible for getting you income. So you've got to balance it up.
Yeah, you just post what you think's good. Stick with your principles. Post what you like. And if it gets the traction, it gets the traction. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah, awesome. So as we're on to social media, it's almost like I planned this out, isn't it? As we're on to social media, another form of that is what we're doing right now. You know, it's podcasts. I started mine sort of end of last year now, and I got my sort of motivation for doing it, and mine's building slowly and getting some good listens and stuff. But you've just created the Wets and Dits podcast. I heard the first episode the other day. Great work, good effort. Give us a rundown on that, what it's aimed to do and what the future holds for it.
Yeah, so we just posted our first episode, me and Will McLaren, who's another ex-bootneck. The whole idea of it really came from, I was looking around, one, the military community that we do have, and thinking there's not really a specified place to bring everyone together. So I thought this could be a good idea. And on top of that, I was posting a lot on Instagram, but obviously you don't get that much space to get your point across, especially if you're trying to bring across a more pertinent point that's maybe a little bit harder to explain. You need a little bit more time. So I thought podcasts would probably be the way to go. It was a toss-up between podcasting and vlogging with YouTube, and I was sort of advised for both. They both had massive pros and cons, but in the end, I've gone with the podcast with a few little video clips flown in. So hopefully it comes out all right. We've got some great guests lined up. So it's very much fake it till you make it at the minute.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've done, mate. Like mine's a similar thing. Like if you look in America, you're inundated with hoofing podcasts by the ex-military community, all doing a range of different things. But if you look into the UK, in terms of podcasts and veterans doing YouTube and stuff, there's actually very few, and none on the scale of America. You know, you've got the HR podcast, which is really good, and you've got Declassified, but they're the only two sort of consistent podcasts for military in the UK. And when you think two podcasts that post maybe one a week that are anywhere between half an hour and an hour, like half an hour and an hour, both of them say 2 hours a week of podcast content coming from the veteran community in the UK is minuscule.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. So it sort of got talking when we had a load of us together and the idea come up, and everyone sort of sat around going, yeah, you're right, there isn't a central place, because it does, you bring a guest on, it does help everyone. It's good networking. You bring on, I had Sean on last week. It was a good hour for him to talk about what he does, his past experiences, push his gym that's just opening, push his book. And then it's a good chance for me to get my content out there. So it's mutual for both people. It's beneficial for everyone. It's just, it can be quite time consuming as well. So it's getting the balance. Like we said, the podcast views don't pay the bills. We've all got jobs. We've all got to focus on that first. So it scares again, it's balancing it, but it's enjoyable. I'm enjoying it, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing with anything that you set up in the social media space, is that, as we said, like when we were chatting just via text a few weeks ago, it's got to be what you want it to be. You know, if you set out with a Facebook page, with an Instagram account, with a podcast, with a YouTube channel, whatever it is, if you set out going, right, I'm going to make 1 million followers, then yeah, that's great, that's brilliant. You do what you have to do to hit that. if you start putting the content out there because you enjoy it and you want to have conversations with different people and bring them into a space and give them a voice and a platform, then, and it's part of what you do, you've got to treat it like that and not let yourself stress out too much about it.
It is, and it definitely comes across to your audience as well. They know if this is something you generally are passionate about, something you generally know about. If you're trying to fake it, it's so hard. People will pick it out. I mean, I'm on my page. I talk about running, weights, endurance, military training, all that sort of stuff. But I know what I'm talking about, but I don't pretend to be an expert in any of them fields. I'm not an expert runner. I'm not an expert weightlifter. I'm not an S&C coach. So whenever I do post something, there's going to be someone come up and pull you up on anything. So at the end of the day, I'm there to give advice to people. I'm giving the advice from my knowledge, my experiences. But if you try and fake it on there, someone's going to pull you up because it's such a big community.
Yeah, massively. And yeah, no, you are right. You are right. And there's always going to be, especially if you start pushing the military thing, there's always going to be someone that knows just a little bit more or has read something else, and it can be a minefield out there. So the ex-military community in the UK, that's the sort of next topic. And again, we've sort of slided into it quite nicely. It's still not a touch on the US, but in terms of growing podcast scene, in terms of companies like Contact Coffee, Cineties Guild, HR4K, you know, it's really growing. What's your sort of views and hopes for the sort of ex-military community in the UK?
Well, it's good. So when I first left about a year ago now, I'd done what I think a lot of people do with the military, is they sort of completely break contact, and I sort of completely pulled myself away from it. Didn't want anything to do with it. And then obviously it's such a big part of your life joining at 18, and then sort of them years where you are very impressionable, so you don't realize how much of you it is. So pulling myself completely away was a bad thing to do, and I think that's why a lot of lads struggle when they first leave. So when I started looking into the community more, and I was going to meet bootnecks, the amazing thing is when you go meet a group of bootnecks, you could have never met any of them before, but you're best mates again within an hour. So now we've got that group, the UK bootnecks, we're meeting up every week, doing fizz with each other, going out for a drink. And it's like being back in the core to a degree, but being a civvy, which works quite nicely. So it gives you the best of both worlds. So it's like you said, it's definitely growing. There's a lot of companies out there. And same with the podcasts, the mutual benefits. It's about helping each other out, marketing with each other, networking. There was the UK Bootnecks in Business last week, which is a great event to everyone to meet up. And it's amazing how well the bootneck lads do when they do leave the core. They've just got such a good start up from the core on how to hold themselves, how to look after themselves, that it does translate really well into civilian life.
Yeah, I think it's just incredible. And it's not always the stuff that you would imagine as well. Like obviously, especially for PTIs and stuff like that and Marines, because there's that image of us having a high level of fitness. You know, a lot of us go into the fitness industry. But I think, you know, no one's thought of everything. And, you know, some people in that UK Bootnecks group are, you know, they're doing festivals, you know, they're doing rugby festivals. And you're like, that's when in a million years would you imagine an ex-bootneck having a rugby sevens tournament? It just doesn't, like, you don't click it as a thing, but they're doing everything and they do it. Lads are just smashing everything at the moment.
Yeah, lads are doing really well. And when you meet with lads, it is impressive how many different fields lads have their fingers in so many pies. And it's helping each other out. I mean, you can't do all these things without the help from others. So it's nice to have the little community where you can send out a Charlie one in the group for a hand and someone will come out and help you.
Yeah, or some random workout in a random country that needs to go this evening. It's just like, what? Like,
who? I know, I woke up to that this morning. I was like, am I doing anything today?
Yeah. I was like, I wish I could. Yeah, sorry, everyone's just like, what? But anyway. So the community within the UK in terms of the ex-military, it leaves, as you said, sharing ideas and mutual help, you know, me and you coming on this, you've got a podcast, I've got a podcast, we both do personal training, that kind of thing. You giving a voice to Sean, who, for people that don't know, owns Beyond Limits in Thurrock, which is literally down the road from me. I'm onto him getting on this podcast as well. It goes hand in hand. It's a weird business vibe, isn't it? And what I'm trying to get at is, essentially, we're all competitors. You know, you've got a podcast and a fitness company. I've got a podcast and a fitness company. Sean's got a fitness company. Glyn has got a fitness company. And technically, we're all competitors. But it doesn't really feel like it.
No, not at all. And I think it's that mutual understanding of you scratch my back, I scratch yours. It's so ingrained, isn't it, to help each other out. And when I first started Recon Fit sort of 3-4 months ago, I was having to reach out to lads and say, look, can you give me a share? Can you put this out there? Because I haven't got the leverage at the moment on my small sort of following. So lads were doing it. Lads were sharing it, sharing this, sharing that. And it helped me grow very quickly. So now you almost have that set of responsibility myself now, that if someone comes to me to share and to push this, can you push that, that you have to do it because someone's done it for me.
Yeah, and I think it's important to have your loyalties in that way. And what is your view versus like competition versus helping people out? Would you always do it? Will you draw a line? Or, you know, think of a business head now. What would your stance be?
I had this conversation with Will the other day, actually, and I said, at the end of the day, you have to put your business first. The difference is with the Corps, with the military, is it's all right not being Jack and helping everyone out, but you still get your wage in at the end of the month. You still get paid. The difference is running your own company on Civvy Street and a business is you rely on your money. You need to get your income in. So whatever happens, you need to put your own business first. Once that's established, once you've got a setup, once you've got a little bit of extra time, then go and help others do that. But you should never be putting your own business behind someone else's.
Yeah, mate, 100%. No, I completely agree with that. And I think that's a great way of sort of summing that up. You know, it's a blurred line. And I think a lot of people look at what we're doing at our low level, you know, with me, you, Sean, for instance, in this triangle that we've been using, you know, we're helping each other out and we're getting people on to talk about different stuff. And essentially, you know, we are competitors and it doesn't really matter because the space is so big. And by space, I mean, you know, everyone's got two ears and everyone's got 24 hours in a day. So me putting out an hour's podcast versus you putting out an hour's podcast, even if it's with the same person, it's never going to be the same. And it's always going to have a place.
Yeah, that's it. It's you got to help each other out, but you don't want to be too agreeable. You need to be able to say no to people. You need to be able to have that firm stance. If you're someone that says yes, yes, yes to everything, when the time comes to have to say no, you can't do it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And you know, it's like if you're the type of guy that says yes to everything, as soon as you say no, you're in the wrong. And it's like, well, no, I'm still doing you a favor and all these other things I've done. But yeah, people don't see it that way.
It's the same as in the Corps. You can imagine in your troops, there was the lads that were the very agreeable lads that said yes to everything, didn't argue, got on with it. In one sense, they're hoofing lads. They're the lads that aren't Jack. They're getting the work done. They'll do it without complaining. You had the other lads that were a little bit more argumentative and fought back and pushed back. So when it came to a shit detail coming out, the troop boss gave it to the lads who were going to say yes because he didn't want the argument.
Yeah, true.
It doesn't always help being that lad who says yes, 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 and always willing to run about, because at the end of the day, people are going to push you around.
Yeah, you've got to find that balance for yourself, haven't you? Where your limit is of the crap that you take and why you take it. And as you say, it works for business as well, you know, or your personal role, you know. The more you say yes to other people and helping other people out, the more you're going to sacrifice on your own business, and you've got to find what that line is for you.
Yeah, and you need to help someone else out if you want, expect them to help you out in return.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Awesome. So if people approach you and they're looking to join the Corps, what are, you know, two or three things that you would say now in hindsight after going through the journey and leaving? What are three things that you would, you know, give as a top tip, if you like, to joining the Corps?
I would say, first of all, coming back to the start with PRMC. So a lot of lads use that to try and prove themselves to the core and prove that they can be there. But at the same time as well, it's a good time for you to have a look at the core. It works both ways. So it's a good time to have a look around. It's a little bit of an experience of what training is going to be like. So don't just think I need to impress them to take me on. The core needs to impress you as well. At the end of the day, it's a career you're going into. So use PRMC as an experience to see if it's for you, not just you for them.
I like that. That's a good one.
I'd say training's hard. It's hard to explain to people because people want advice about training, don't they?
Yeah.
And it's very hard to explain until you've been there. So for me, I think with most people, they think physically, I'm going to fail physically. Very, very few people fail training physically. I can't think of anyone that failed training physically. They just get backtrooped if they can't do a test. People end up leaving and putting their chits in because they're cold, they're wet, they're tired. So yeah, that's something that you can't teach someone until you've been there. I mean, you don't know how cold you've been until you've been cold in training. You don't know how tired you've been until you've been a nod. So I'd say to people going into training, don't over worry about the fitness. Look, if you pass PRMC, you're fit enough to be there. So you have to concentrate on the other things. And at the end of the day, if you get into training and you are cold, you're wet, you're tired, and you don't want to be there, then don't be there. It's not for you. There's no one's going to look badly upon you for leaving. It's not for everyone. So, like I said, that's got to be taken into consideration. And then once you're in the core, it's a whole different ball game. I mean, training and life in the core is chalk and cheese. It is completely different. It's just always want to do things. That's what I would say. When it came to my time of leaving, I knew it was time to leave because things were coming up, trips away were coming up, and I didn't want to do them. So while you're in there, while you're hungry, volunteer for things. Get yourself away, get the traveling done, get yourself on all the courses you can, and just go out with the lads, just enjoy it, especially if you're in them younger years. Make the most of it. It's not just a job, it is a lifestyle. So just absorb it.
Yeah, you got to milk it, haven't you?
Yeah, I love looking back now, 18 to 25, going out every weekend with the lads. That's the things you remember. That's the invaluable stuff. So there was always the lads that didn't go out and, you know, were mega into their fears and stayed in, but that's not what the core's about. There's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So we're on to our last little bit now, mate. I think we've smashed through so much info and so much to do. I think the last thing that I just wanted to cover is, you know, just a couple of tips. We've done the core, but a couple of tips on essentially not so much. I was going to say a couple of tips for starting a fitness company, but the more we've chatted and the more we've worked out what ReconFit is and where it aspires to be, I think to put it in the box of a fitness company just wouldn't be fair. So what I'm going to say is top tips for someone who wants to progress in something new, a new venture, a new journey. Just a couple for them.
Number one, I'd say you need to know where you want to end up. You need to know what your end goal is. I mean, if you don't know what that is, you don't know what direction to start going off in. I mean, your journey can change. We mentioned it earlier that all businesses evolve. They all change as time goes on and it gets molded into something different. But you need to have a idea of where you want to go. And on the same point of that, you need to understand where you are now. If you don't know where you are now, you could be anywhere, and that's too many places to be. You need to know where you are now, what direction you're heading in, and that gives you the tools to, all right, what do I need to work on to get to where I want to be? I think too many people don't really understand where they want to end up as their end goal.
Yeah, I think it comes down to any sort of planning, isn't it? You know, you can't plan anything if you don't know what the goal is. You've got to find the goal and then work back.
Yeah, that's it. Know where you want to end up. I say as well is to reach out to other people. It's having a little bit of humility, realizing you don't know it all. There's people who there's always going to be people who know more than you, someone who's been there and done it. The biggest advice I've got was just being humble enough to sit down and actually ask someone else for advice who's done this before. Before I started my podcast, I could Google everything. I could search this, search that. But the best bit of advice I had was just sitting down with someone who'd done a podcast before for years. And a half an hour chat just gave me everything I needed to know.
Yeah, I think experience is always invaluable, isn't it? No matter what the topic.
Yeah, that's it. And it's, I said, it's just having that little bit of humility about yourself to realise that, you know what, I don't know everything.
That is awesome. Well, cheers, Tom. Thank you for coming on, mate. You've obviously had a very varied journey and an interesting story, and I'm really excited to see where ReconFit goes and how it grows and how it develops. But how do people get in touch with you? What's your social medias? How do, can people follow and get involved with ReconFit?
So the social media handle is Recon_fit. That's all it is. And that's currently all we're on. So I've got my contact details are on there if anyone wants to get in touch. But yeah, give the page a look, check it out, let me know what you think.
Awesome. Cheers, mate. As I say, thank you for coming on The Working Title.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Working Title, a podcast hosted by PJ Harries. Remember, do something that makes you just a little bit better every single day.